Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Second hour of the War Room is on. Donald Trump himself is live right now at a rally in Hebron, Kentucky. Let's check in on the President of the United States, Donald Trump.
As they do, we have added 70,000 new construction jobs in just a short period of time, including 8,000 brand new construction jobs in Kentucky. Okay? Kentucky. I love the way a real Kentuckian pronounces it, but if I do it, but I love Kentucky. More Americans are working today than any time in history, and that number is going to be, wait till you see the numbers by the end of the year. We did an excursion. You know what an excursion is? We had to take a little trip to get rid of some evil, very evil people. It should have been done for 47 years. They've been killing our people. 47 years. 47 years. And I can only say this. They were all prepared. They're very strong. You know, they're going to try and take over the whole Middle East. They were going to knock out Israel. They don't know what the hell hit them, right? They don't know what hit them. They got hit by the American military. They don't know. They say, what the hell is happening? They didn't expect anything like this. To bring down energy costs for American workers and families and businesses like this one, we ended the Green News scam. You know the scam? Greatest scam in American history. Well, maybe the election results of the second election were. I would say what was the greater scam? The Green News scam or the 2020 rigged election? I would say the 2020. I think the election. I think the election, but what difference? But the main thing is, we said, get out and vote. We're going to do it again. And we're going to make it too big to rig. And that's what we did. We got the highest vote in history. We didn't need that big. We made it too big to rig. We terminated the insane electric vehicle mandate where you were mandated. And I like electric cars. I think they're great. I like Elon. I said, Elon, look, not everybody wants an electric car. And I like him. And he does. It's a great product, everything. But they have to have. We ended the mandate. We ended the mandate. Now you can have gasoline. You can have hybrid. You can have whatever the hell you want. You can have electric. They wanted you to buy an electric car by 2030. The only one problem, you can't charge it. You ever see a charger? You're driving down the road, you're running a little low, and they say, electric charging plant, 150 miles up the road. That's a bad feeling. And we massively increased production of American oil, natural gas, and clean, beautiful Kentucky coal. And we're not allowed in the Trump administration, we're not allowed to use the word coal without preceding it with two words, clean, beautiful. We say clean, beautiful coal. And we had Doug Burgum the other day, Secretary of the Interior, who's great, and Chris Wright, Secretary of Energy. And they were giving a long speech on coal. And I tried to stop them. I was in the audience. They kept saying clean, beautiful coal, clean, beautiful coal, clean, beautiful. And after about like 40 times, I said, wait a minute, just say coal. It's too much. But it's clean, beautiful coal, and it's back, and it's roaring back. You know, it's interesting. China uses a lot of coal. China is very smart. They use coal. What they don't use much of, if at all, are windmills. So they make all the windmills. And they sell that garbage to us. Round and round it goes, keeps losing money. Every time it goes around, it loses $25. That's a lot, you know.
All right, so that's Donald Trump following the Susie Wiles plan of stump speeches for the midterm elections. Is it just me, or does he sound like Shane Gillis doing an impression of Donald Trump? Donald Trump sounds like he's doing an impression of Shane Gillis. You know what? We're going to start over. We're going to go to commercial break. We're going to come back. We're going to hit the news. And we're going to forget everything that just happened in the last 30 seconds. Deal?
One of the most important things to me in my life is to get things right and to tell the truth and to be accurate. That's why they say Alex Jones is right. But it's not just our news, our prediction, our information that are incredibly accurate. It's the products. And out of all the amazing supplements at thealexjonesstore.com, our methylene blue, ultra methylene blue, is the best you're going to find on the market. It's so good for your body. Instant, clean, amazing energy. You owe it to yourself, if you sat on the fence, to go to thealexjonesstore.com right now and get ultra methylene blue. And believe me, you are going to want to reorder it again. We have an 84% reorder on that product. No other supplement anywhere has anything even close. That is how amazing it is. Secure your ultra methylene blue now at thealexjonesstore.com, and thanks for keeping us on the air.
Repeat what you said is happening. You feel in the...
I feel like that stuff in my fingers. I feel tingling fingers.
There's the camera. Blast them with full power right there.
Ah!
Yeah!
No spin, no surrender. This is Harrison Smith on The War Room, with live streams firing on X and band.video.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Infowars.com, band.video. We are waging the information war. Donald Trump giving stump speeches. Try to make up a little bit for the catastrophic downturn of support in the country. I guess I'm not too surprised that, you know, he's still going to get sizable crowds. I mean, I would think that with each one of these things that have occurred in the Trump administration, I feel like the distance between informed people and not informed people is widening. There's more and more informed people every day. But the difference between somebody that's tuned in and somebody that's not is, like, unrecognizable. Like, they're unrecognizable at this point. I don't know what normal people think is going on. I mean, I am literally glued to news feeds 24 hours a day. And I can barely figure out exactly what's happening. So, you know, imagine if you're the type of person that just, like, gets alerts sent to you from Apple, and that's how you find out about the world. It's just God only knows what those people are thinking, which is kind of a shame, because that means this is a massive opportunity being missed. Yeah, people there, you just heard it in the first 5 minutes, Donald Trump talking about Iran, 47 years they've been trying to kill us, and the crowd starts up with a chant of USA, USA. I get it, you're excited, you're into it, but, like, they all support the war? I have trouble believing that. Everything I've seen, the war is not popular at all. So this would be an amazing moment, this would be an amazing opportunity for us to make that known to Trump. That's not happening. This is from today. Thomas Massie will go down as the worst Republican congressman in the long and fabled history of the United States Congressman. United States Congress. You know, that's just not true. Major Marjorie Trader Brown. Remember, green turns to brown under stress. What? They're all misfits and losers, but Massie, who's running against a great American patriot in the Kentucky primary, will hopefully lose big. I love Kentucky. Yeah. Again, the only thing that Thomas Massie has done is not support the wars for Israel, and then the people he's running against are all supported by disguise PACs. Should we call them disguise PACs? What should the term be for when a PAC knows how unpopular they are, so they launder their money through the Freedom PAC, Kentucky Freedom PAC, Kentucky MAGA PAC? It's just straight up an Israeli PAC. But they're stripping the Israeli labeling because they know how unpopular that is. It's an interesting idea. The crew's giving me ideas, but I can't say them on the air. But yes, I'm just kind of disappointed. I'm kind of disappointed in the MAGA people, because we know this isn't popular. And again, we know Trump responds to things like that. Like, if Trump were to... We've actually seen it happen. I mean, the reason that Ross Ulbricht is free right now is because when he brought that... When Trump didn't know who the hell the guy was, he didn't know anything about him. he brought him up in a speech, and the crowd broke into an enormous sustained applause, and he was like, okay, politically, this is what I should do. Yeah, MAGA KY Super PAC has spent $1.8 million so far opposing Massey. It's literally a PAC, but with a new name. It's not sophisticated. It's just, you know, they expect you not to look into this stuff. I want to go to a video here. Clip number 13. It's a little bit long, but we'll go to the first part at least. Or maybe I'll save that. We have a lot of like domestic news. I don't want to spend the whole time on Iran, but obviously we'll hit that first, and we'll try to get to the bottom of that. And it looks like, I mean, every sign I'm seeing is that Israel is suffering the most from this. Everything out of Iran is still just as confident as it ever was. Everything out of the Trump administration is just as incoherent and nonsensical and confident as it ever was. A little crazy. But Israel seems to be looking for a way out. At least that's the rumor. This is a rundown from Shail Ben Ephraim at academic_LA on X. He says, I've talked to some Israeli officials and have a good deal of read a good deal of Israeli media. Here's how the war in Iran is being perceived there so far. One, on a tactical level, they believe it has gone very well and that Israel has destroyed more of the Iranian military capability than expected. Two, they are disappointed that the regime has not been weakened as much as they expected and that they remain firmly in control. In particular, the lack of a rise-up movement along the population is cause for concern. Loyalty is confusing to them. Three, they are finding Trump to be unreliable. While Israel favors a prolonged campaign to ensure total dismantlement of threats, Trump has signaled a desire to end the war soon, creating a potential rift in war aims. Four, Hezbollah is stronger than expected. It has hit Israel and with drones and missiles and killed soldiers. They have recovered better than expected. Five, the inability of Ben-Gurion Airport to withstand closing and chaos has shown fragility in the Israeli social cohesion. Six, they're disappointed in the lack of support from Gulf states who want to end the war rather than the escalation Israel wants. Seven, Israel accepts that the regime in Tehran will survive and just hopes that this weakens them in preparation for the next round. Oh, good. Yeah, I think we should destroy Israel. Have I mentioned that I think Israel is the problem here? So literally, this is an Israeli guy talking about Israeli leadership, and every bullet point so far is like, well, they're disappointed that the war isn't bigger and more destructive and gonna last for longer, but they're taking some solace, right? This is a consolation for them, is that if this war doesn't destroy the world, there's always the next war, okay? They're already planning the next round, like it's a boxing match. It's like, please, Iran, just come on already, please. Please, for all of us. Seven, Israel accepts that the regime in Tehran will survive. Yeah, so they're like, but, you know, that's fine. We'll just kill their children later. Eight, there's a growing fear among Israeli strategists that they're winning the war but losing the region. While military targets are being obliterated, the civilian infrastructure damage is causing a backlash. Nine, the war is proving very expensive. They need to divert NIS $28 billion, which is about $9 billion, to the military. And that's forced the government to freeze social projects, leading to the first significant anti-government protest since the war began, specifically from the middle class bearing the tax burden. 10, they're aware that the war is very unpopular in the U.S. and that Israel is being blamed. They're concerned about the ramifications for the alliance. Are you now? Are you worried about the ramifications? Okay. And what are you doing about that? Again, the responsible, reasonable solution, when your behavior is causing a rift in your alliance, when your actions are causing your allies to turn against you, what's the solution to that, class? Can we all say, change your actions. You're the problem. You need to change. I'm wasting my breath. This is not a message they're ready or willing to hear. They're only going to try to censor everybody. That's their solution. Their solution to their actions driving their allies away is to go to their allies and say, you have to silence everyone who dislikes me. You have to impose laws and restrictions and big tech algorithms to silence those who disagree with me. and my senseless, meaningless round two in an infinite war for Israel's greatness that isn't even working. While Netanyahu is painting this as a huge success, it doesn't look like one to Israeli strategic partners. The public knows it as well. Again, it's like his point that this guy's making is like, Netanyahu is saying this war is really successful, but the reality on the ground is that it's not going as well as they say. But then you read his list and it's like, okay, the Israelis just literally want more destroyed. They're just like, why is Iran, why aren't they all dead yet? And why are all the Gulf states in America not wanting to fight a forever war for us? They're the problem, folks. I don't know how much more clear it could be. Running out of time, Israel escalates Iran strikes as Trump weighs, quote, elegant exit. Such an elegant exit, I'm sure. The Israeli military is pushing for more strikes on Iran before the window of opportunity closes when the U.S. president decides to end the war. The hourglass in the war with Iran appears to have turned, with the regime in Tehran showing no signs of collapse, the mass protest of several months ago showing no signs of reawakening, and the mobilization of the Kurds or other minorities no longer seem relevant. The Americans, as well as the Israelis, are looking for alternatives that will allow them to declare victory at some point and stand down. Israel is beginning to update its goals and lower the bar of expectations. Regime change, which was a declared goal at the start of the war, is being replaced with the vague wording about creating conditions for regime change and destroying the regime's ability to continue oppressing its people. I'm sorry, but there has just never been a collapse like this. This has just been a cascade of errors, just a comedy of absurdity this entire time. Like, what are we talking about? We're less than 2 weeks into the war, and already the war aims have changed about 1,000 times. Israel is just bombing the most destructive and painful crap they can with no strategic value whatsoever. And they're just floundering, and now they're looking for a way out. We're less than 2 weeks in, and they're like panicking, hitting the eject button, and coming to the realization that Iran is keeping the door closed. Iran is like, no, you started this. We're going to finish it. You don't get to just, oh, if we're winning, we'll fight forever and we'll bomb all the children. We'll just, you know, ignore human rights and international law and we'll just kill everybody. But the minute they start losing, the minute Israel is on the receiving end, it's all, oh, well, gee, well, we need peace in this region. Gosh, you know, these international laws are being broken. I can't believe how these guys are acting. And it's just like, you pathetic, despicable cowards. You deserve it. Honestly, it's just like, my God. But of course, you know, I feel bad saying that because, well, the vast, vast majority of Israelis are not just happy with how their military acts, but they're usually more bloodthirsty. Then their leadership is avoiding the consequences of this war. Why is Netanyahu minister flying to New York while Israelis run to shelter? The Israeli government's exceptions committee, recently established to determine who may board a plane departing the country during wartime, this week also dealt with the Likud social equity minister May Golan's request to attend the Women's Day event at the United Nations building in New York over the last several days. According to the criteria set by the committee, which includes representatives from transportation, foreign, and economy ministries, the conditions for boarding a plane departing Israel are, quote, security or political necessity and urgent humanitarian cases. So, guys, we are now allied with a country that is not letting its people leave. The Israeli people, for all intents and purposes, are now hostages to their own government, as they now have a committee that determines whether you are of sufficient importance to get a plane out. And the war being waged that is rocking Tel Aviv on a nightly basis is being waged by Netanyahu and his ministers through remote connections in Berlin and New York. Crazy. Yeah, nobody else can get out. And even if they could get out, even if they could find flights, they apparently need the Israeli government's permission to leave, and that's why they're not like us. That's why they're not a Western outpost. They are something else entirely. Maybe in the most extreme and extenuating circumstances, maybe you could see the American government doing something like this. But just the sheer idea that the government has a board to determine whether you as an individual are important enough to be able to leave your own country or not. Tell you what, I'd rather live in a country that protects its border and keeps people out than a country that is forcing its people to stay when they're desperate to leave. So, just once again, I mean, how many times do we have to go through, whether it's COVID or the situation, you know, in the war now, it's like time and time again, the New World Order activists create these situations where, like, it's explicit. Some people have rights and other people don't. Some people are important enough to do whatever they want. Other people have to abide by a whole host of arbitrary laws. We saw this in COVID with people like Sergey Brin, the leader of Google, being allowed to fly in and out of New Zealand however he wanted while everybody else was on a travel ban. And in the UK, they actually wrote laws saying if you come to Great Britain, you have to spend 2 weeks in a quarantine hotel. And in the law, it said something like, you're paraphrasing, but essentially said, quote, unless you're important enough to avoid it. Literally, it was like, unless you're a high enough position in a corporation, a government, or, you know, an NGO, those people it's written in the law, they are exempted. Were they any less likely to get or catch COVID? No, obviously not. In fact, if anything, if you're actually concerned about the spread of COVID, it'd be those people that you would be most concerned about isolating and quarantining, because you're gonna stop a, you know, whatever, a garbage man from going on vacation somewhere and coming back. That's not allowed because he might spread the virus. But you're gonna allow high powered CEOs who are in the country to meet with your government and the most important people in your country and could easily infect them. No, those are the people that should be quarantined so as not to kill your elite class, if that was the belief early on in COVID. So they have, again, groomed us into this step by step, incrementally. Degree by degree, they've turned up the water of the boiling frogs to where now we are allied with and constantly uphold the freedom-loving democracy of Israel. Well, meanwhile, Israel is like, yeah, we have this new committee to determine whether you are important enough to live or have to stay and die from the war that we started and are waging from overseas. Incredible. Golan, this minister, received approval because she presented the trip to the UN as a political necessity. You know, you got to go rub elbows with Hillary Clinton at the ladies' lunch. It's a political necessity. Her flight and that of her accompanying team in the middle of the war occupied a significant number of seats that were therefore unavailable for true necessities or urgent humanitarian cases. Golan did not travel alone. Joining her on this expensive trip to New York, apart from her security detail, of course, was the Social Equity Ministry spokesman, Harold Hirschkov, as well as Merav Stern, director of the Authority of the Advancement of the Status of Women and former Social Equity Minister, Asherat Friedman, Stern's deputy. See, these are the important people. These are the people, and this is always how it works. Again, back to COVID, it was sort of the best, most glaring example of how these things were implemented, and I remember explaining this at the time. People like Nancy Pelosi, see, they're the spokespeople for the New World Order. Their mission is critical. So therefore, they need to look good in front of the camera, or else the mission might fail. So they need to be able to get their, you know, go to their hairdresser, even though it should be illegal, even though everybody's supposed to not be able to go to the hairdresser. They're special. They're an exemption because they need to look good so that they can present the message in the best possible way so they can progress the communistic ideals in the most effective way. Therefore, they need to be able to get haircuts. They need to be able to do things that the rest of us can't do. And so always reasoning like this, right? Well, they're the important ones in the government, so they need to have the private jets while everybody else is, you know, carbon creditless and has to, you know, ride the bus. It's always like, well, but these are the important people. And then you look at who the important people are, and it's like, oh, the Minister of Women's Equality. Great. Great. So if you're just like, I don't know, you know, somebody unimportant, like a doctor or a surgeon or something, you have to stay. You're not doing the really important job of progressing, you know, social strife in other countries, so they're easier to exploit. During Golan's tenure, things operated differently. Golan insisted on attending the event with her entire team for the third consecutive year, even while under police investigation for serious corruption charges, and even in the midst of the war, which has limited spaces for ongoing flights. Yeah, but they don't care. No, they don't care, though. From the Syrian girl, at Partisan Girl on X. The ADL is calling the phrase, quote, Operation Epstein Fury is anti-Semitic because Epstein was Jewish. You know, Epstein was an Israeli Mossad agent who blackmailed Trump into this war. This war that was mentioned in his emails, by the way. In his emails, by the way, they say the way to deal with a major scandal is to start a war in another country, obviously. This is what the Washington Post says. This conflict has also sparked a sharp rise in anti-Semitic content, according to researchers from the Anti-Defamation League, a Jewish civil rights organization. Some of it's seeking to link Epstein, who was Jewish, to the conflict. What's anti-Semitic about that? Because they're both Jews? Because they're all Jews? That doesn't make it anti-Semitic. What are you talking about? This is the thing. Something's not just anti-Semitic because it has Jews, right? I mean, that's ridiculous. But this was always the trick. And this is why, especially in, like, you know, the Eighth Front War documentary, I routinely have it reinsisted over and over and have said a million, billion times before, the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism is the keystone to the whole operation. The reason is that all criticism of Zionism is treated as anti-Semitism. Therefore, they can, using this definition and in this structure, when they say the conflict has sparked a sharp rise in anti-Semitism, anti-Semitic content, all that means is Israel waging a war has caused people to criticize Israel. Israel getting America into a war has caused Americans to speak out against Israel. That's all that that means. There's no anti-Semitic content. It's not that Iran went to war with Israel and suddenly people are, like, reading Mein Kampf for the first time and, like, you know, burning down synagogues. Obviously, there are some attacks, you know, mostly from the Muslim extremists. But that's not what this is talking about. This is strictly talking about words and thoughts, and it's defining all words and thoughts that are against Iran or against Israel or the war with Iran as therefore being anti-Semitic. And I had people arguing about this with me, and they're talking about how, like, in the Soviet Union, this was a trick because they wanted, it was like some sort of inversion. And it's like, that may be true, but, like, right now, all of the people who are implementing the speech controls are all insistent. And the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism is being insisted upon because of this aspect to it, because it can frame all criticism of the state of Israel as anti-Semitism. So then you get to point out to a rise in anti-Semitism and say, hey, what a big problem with this is. And of course, people are going to connect it to Epstein, obviously because of the timing, obviously because of the fact that they talked about starting a war with Iran, because of his very close ties to the entire Israeli power structure, as well as the blackmail that seems to be forcing America's hand right now, and the Epstein files, you know, revealing a giant aspect of that. It's like a joke I make often on X, and I make it for a particular reason. You know, Dan Bongino comes out and goes, I'm sick of all this anti-Semitism. Criticizing Epstein is anti-Semitism. And my response is always, you're just saying that because they're Jewish. You understand what I'm saying when I say that? That we're not criticizing them because they're Jewish. We're criticizing them because they're blood-drinking vampires who are starting World War III. You're defending them because they're Jewish. You understand? Evil is evil, no matter where it comes from.
So, CIA declassified documents last week, Operation Artichoke, to poison vaccines, food supply, and the water to dumb us down and make us controllable. Now new documents about ESP control, how we're really electrochemical systems, liquid crystals, and the pineal gland, and how most people have microscopic to actual large worm infestations, not just from cats, you name it, like Kennedy has one in his brain, and they didn't tell the public most cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer is worms. Now, this is all over the place. Joe Rogan talks about it, I have for years. But here it is. Scientists and doctors figuring out now, the CIA knew in 62 that dewormers could reverse most cancers and didn't tell the public that's mass murder. Here it is.
My parasite medications work against cancer cells. And it turns out that the parasites use mitochondrial substrate level phosphorylation in the tissue. And these embendazole, fenbendazole kill these parasites. So I tried it on the cancer cell, And sure as hell, it targets the mitochondrial substrate and glycolysis. So we have a mechanism now why parasite medications are working. But cancer is not a parasite. All these people say, oh, cancer is a parasite. It's not a parasite. Parasites and tumors use a common metabolic pathway, and a drug that works against parasites can be very effective against cancer. And that's what we begin to see, especially under nutritional ketosis.
So to be clear, the anti-parasite drugs cut off the same mechanism in cancer, but we now know and have known that a lot of cancers from parasites, it's double good. And I don't sell that, but you can buy it online. And my medical doctor told me years ago, take this once a year as a regimen. I do. That's important information you might want to write down, folks, okay? All right. Ladies and gentlemen, you can look it up. Go to the UN's own website. They admit it. Over 2 million people have cognitive disabilities because they do not have enough iodine. In the 20s, they found this house where they put it in the salt. IQs went up about 20 points on average, 15, 20 points. Well, we have the very best atomic iodine in the world. Has been available in several years, ladies and gentlemen. But we have the original X2 back, but even stronger, pure atomic. Atomic isn't radioactive. It means it's on the periodic table. It is absolutely pure. And I mix that with ultramethylene blue that is also on record good for your pineal gland and reversing the calcification, the rest of it. Your Doc Chambers on, medical doctor, special forces colonel, army colonel. And I said, what do you think of methylene blue? He goes, oh, I've been on this since 2004. When I got blown up in Iraq, I had brain damage because it blew away the sheath that's on my nerves. So I went and did research and found out that they had studies going back over 100 years on methylene blue helping regrow the sheaths on your nerves and all the rest of it. Well, we've got the best methylene blue, and I just mixed the iodine with the methylene blue. With this water, I'm going to drink this, and this is pure rocket fuel. So good for your body. Essential iodine with methylene blue together is amazing. Pretty scary looking, too. So, by the way, the new product is supposed to be available right now at theolivesealstore.com is T3. It's X2 back even better at theolivesealstore.com. So for all the fans that wanted it, everybody that wanted to get it, we have had it for over a year. It is back, reborn, like the Phoenix, even stronger. Exclusively available through our sponsor, theolivesealstore.com. But regardless, our methylene blue, our iodine is the best, and it does so many other things. Libido, stamina, energy. It skips the oxidation process in the cells. The methylene blue and iodine works very similarly, and they go together like a horse and carriage. Get them both now. There's also another big sale as well at thealexshowstore.com, and I thank you for your support.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
I'm just amazed at the schizophrenic nature of the reporting on this war. Let's go ahead and go to clip number 6 here, because this is just a quick compilation from, God forbid, our friends over at CNN. I know, it's just like, but this is, you know, what do they say? War makes strange bedfellows. Okay, fine. We're unironically showing CNN clips now. This is just, this is where they've pushed us, folks. This is how far they've pushed us. Go to clip number 6 now.
This is not Iraq. This is not endless.
We're already substantially ahead of our time projections.
I don't know how long it'll take. We have objectives. We will do this as long as it takes to achieve those objectives.
The achievable objectives of Operation Epic Fury, we expect to last about 4 to 6 weeks.
This is only just the beginning.
We've already won in many ways, but we haven't won enough.
We're achieving major strides toward completing our military objective. And some people could say they're pretty well complete.
Could call it a tremendous success right now as we leave here. I could call it, or we could go further, and we're going to go further.
Jin, you said it would be over soon. Are you thinking this week it will be over?
No,
are you talking
but soon.
About days?
I think so.
Okay.
This is not endless nation building.
We won't be building any nations. This is endless nation destroying. Let's get it straight here. where we will not be building anything up. We will be destroying ancient civilizations for, I would say, short-term gain, but no, again, we're not actually gaining anything. So I guess probably the best strategy for me to approach all of this is just to ignore what they're saying, because obviously what they're saying just isn't true. It's just not reality. I mean, how's this? Does this sound like everything under control when you got the Independent reporting this? Largest ever emergency oil release approved to address Iran war crisis and global supply fears. Yeah. The International Energy Agency has agreed to release the largest volume of emergency oil reserves in its history to counter the effects on energy markets of the war in the Middle East. The Paris-based organization will make 400 million barrels of oil available for its members' emergency reserves. It's a larger stock than the 182.7 million barrels that were released in 2022 by the IEA's 32 member countries in response to Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine. Quote, without sufficient routes to market and no more available storage, Middle East oil producers have started to reduce production, IEA Executive Director Faith Birol said. And we've seen further attacks and damage to energy and energy-related infrastructure. Refinery operations have also been disrupted, with major implications for jet fuel and diesel fuel supplies in particular. And that doesn't even get into the fertilizer that's being held up and so much more. Then you have this. Brain trauma, shrapnel, and amputations. Injuries of U.S. troops in Iran in the Iran attacks are more severe than disclosed. An Iranian drone attack in Kuwait that injured dozens of American troops and killed at least six was reportedly more severe than initially reported, with injuries allegedly including brain trauma and burns, with one service member who may need an amputation. The strike, which targeted a unit on a civilian port in the Persian Gulf, also caused shrapnel wounds, according to CBS News. At least 140 U.S. service members were injured over the first 10 days of the U.S.-Israel campaign against Iran, according to the Pentagon spokesperson Sean Parnell. At least 108 service members have returned to duty. Eight remain listed as severely injured, defense attorneys told The Independent. More than 30 troops remain hospitalized at medical centers in San Antonio, D.C., and Germany. So again, paying a bigger price than they want us to know. And so, again, I wish this wasn't the case. I wish Trump had done this and didn't continue to do this. But I just, everything he said is a lie. I mean, we are not winning. We have not achieved our goals. I'm not even sure we even have goals well, like, enunciated at this point. The latest I've seen is that our goals are literally just to destroy everything and burn everything down. Like, our latest sort of official dispatch just says that we want to target all industrial, like, their entire industrial base forever. Just literally leave them a failed state. It's the only possible outcome from the way that we're directing this war. So we haven't achieved the aims. We're not winning by any means. And Trump's like, yeah, we've already won, but we're just going to keep it going for a little bit longer. Only they keep asking for ceasefires. The Trump administration keeps asking for ceasefires, and Iran keeps rejecting us. Iran rules out ceasefire with U.S. and Israel. It's from AA.com, Istanbul. Iran on Tuesday ruled out the possibility of reaching a ceasefire with the U.S. and Israel, saying it intends to continue responding to attacks against the country. Quote, certainly we are not seeking a ceasefire, Parliamentary Speaker Mohammed Bagher Kalibaf said on X. Quote, we believe the aggressor must be punished and taught a lesson that will deter them from attacking Iran again. The Iranian speaker accused Israel of perpetuating a recurring pattern of conflict and diplomacy. Quote, the Zionist regime, Israel, has constantly perpetuated a vicious cycle of war, negotiation, ceasefire, then war again throughout its disgusting history. We will break this cycle, he said. Regional escalations flared when Israel and the U.S. launched a joint attack against Iran, killing more than 1,200 people and injuring 10,000. Refusing to surrender, Tehran has retaliated with drones and missile strikes targeting Israel, Iraq, Jordan, and Gulf countries that are home to U.S. military assets. So yeah, they're not slowing down at all. I mean, they're slowing down, but they're not because they can't do more, because this is a strategy of prolonged conflict that Israel cannot sustain and that America has no stomach to sustain. So this really can't go on that much longer, especially with the way that Israel is being hit on a nightly basis. and they are getting pummeled badly. Meanwhile, Iran has laid about a dozen mines in the Strait of Hormuz, sources say. Iran has deployed about a dozen mines in the Strait of Hormuz, two sources familiar with the matter said, in a move likely to complicate the reopening of the narrow waterway, an important route for shipping oil and liquefied natural gas. Exports of oil and LNG through the strategic choke point along Iran's coast have effectively been halted by the war the U.S. launched 12 days ago, hoping to drive a surge in world energy prices. And they've struck three boats. I mean, obviously, the insurance companies are not covering anybody going through Hormuz. And this was just, you know, imminently predictable. Like, you'd have to be hard not to predict this sort of stuff. This is a post from a ex-user named EGMALRI. I have no idea how to pronounce that. But it's called the Dumb Superpower. The Iranian IRGC Command Center said it had expected the United States to be better prepared than what it is witnessing on the battlefield. According to the Iranian assessment, Washington entered this war convinced that overwhelming firepower would compensate for the absence of strategic thinking. What has emerged instead, they argue, is a military machine capable of immense destruction, but struggling to understand the nature of the war it has entered. From the IRGC's perspective, the United States possesses extraordinary military muscle, but little strategic imagination. Iran's response, carefully structured around regional escalation and asymmetric pressure, appears to have caught Washington by surprise. The shock, they say, is visible not only in the Pentagon, but also in the political leadership that authorized the war without fully grasping the strategic environment it was stepping into. Tehran insists it warned from the outset that the war could not remain limited or localized. Yet, according to Iranian officials, the American reaction suggests an extraordinary slow process of adaptation. Each new development seems to force Washington to relearn the battlefield it thought it already controlled. The conclusion drawn by the IRGC is blunt and deliberately provocative. Overwhelming military strength does not automatically translate into strategic intelligence. When a country builds too many muscles, one Iranian official remarked, it often leaves very little space for the brain. Yeah, I have trouble like saying that they're wrong. We seem to be doing this in a very dumb and incapable way. And once again, I don't even understand what our goal is at this point, if there ever was one. The National Guard Bureau has announced the activation of the 260th Special Purpose Brigade within the Washington, D.C. Army National within the Army D.C. Army National Guard in accordance with President Trump's Executive Order 14339 and subsequently directive from the Secretary of War for the National Guard elements for all states and territories to create a quick reaction force able to respond within 24 hours to civil disturbances. Now, the question is, what civil disturbances? And is this, at the end of the day, being set up knowing that this war is about to get even bigger and that anti-war protests will be determined to be a threat to national security and clamped down on? I can't help but, in the light of the Iran war, look at everything that the Trump administration is doing in new eyes and noticing that all of these places, all of these things are being put into place not to serve us, but rather to, frankly, enslave us. And I want to go to clip number 13 here. This is Max Blumenthal talking about audio of APAC's CEO, the American-Israeli Political Action Conference, talking about grooming Marco Rubio and Mike Waltz from the beginning of their political administration or their political ambitions, really, up until the present day. Let's go to Max Blumenthal in clip number 13.
Max, I want to comment on something you said earlier. This is a point where we disagree. I'm struggling to disagree with you a lot on this particular war because I'm very critical of it, but on the reason for the war. Now, I understand you're very critical of Israel, me too, especially when it comes to Gaza. I'm more nuanced when it comes to Lebanon and Iran. But even though I think Israel has too much influence over the American government, I refuse to believe that Trump is in this war because of Israel. It just doesn't make any sense. You know, the same Trump that ended the 12-day war, the same Trump that forced Netanyahu to end the Gaza bombing, end the Gaza war to an extent to reduce the bombing of Gaza, the same Trump that forced Netanyahu to apologize to the leader of Qatar. I'm not saying that Israel might play a role in bogging Trump down in this war, but my theory is that the reason for this war, the strategic benefit for the U.S., is having a more friendly regime. I know it sounds like a fantasy because regime change just doesn't work. Having a more friendly regime like Venezuela and having an Iran which controls the Strait of Hormuz, which is an important choke point for China, having an Iran that's more friendly, that's more open to working with the U.S., which can then be leveraged against China to choke them off if they decide to invade Taiwan?
Well, unfortunately, Benjamin Netanyahu, Marco Rubio, Donald Trump, and Lindsey Graham disagree with you. They've all said so. Benjamin Netanyahu said Trump has realized his 40-year plan for waging war on Iran using the U.S. as the heavy muscle that Israel didn't have. And we know that Benjamin Netanyahu had this plan. The plan was spelled out clearly in the Clean Break document issued about 30 years ago by a group of so-called neoconservatives in Washington who are actually Israeli moles, Douglas Feith, Richard Perl, David Wormser, Mayrav Wormser. And basically, the Clean Break document was prepared at an Israeli-sponsored think tank in Washington for Benjamin Netanyahu when he first came into office in 1996 to prevent a Palestinian state from coming into being. And the concept was to prevent a Palestinian state, defeat all of the regional rivals in the region through regime change by drawing in the U.S. military. You know, Syria, Libya, Sudan. I mean, South Sudan was heavily intertwined with Mossad and, breaking up all these countries. And then the big prize, of course, was Iran. So Netanyahu is realizing the Clean Break document now through Donald Trump, who has been a vehicle for Israeli influence. You know, I saw Donald Trump's first major rally when he became a viable presidential candidate. Many people won't remember this. It was right in front of the U.S. Capitol, and it wasn't a Donald Trump rally. Ted Cruz was there as well, but no one really cared. Donald Trump appeared in front of the U.S. Capitol at a rally against the Iran nuclear deal. And Mario, that was a deal that got the U.S. a friendly government in Iran. The reformist camp was very friendly to Iran, represented Iran's business interests, its middle class, and they were ready to make all kinds of deals with the U.S. in exchange for the lifting of sanctions. Trump was being paid to shred that by Sheldon Adelson, the late casino baron, who was a close ally and friend of Benjamin Netanyahu, sponsor of Netanyahu, and his wife, who now continues his empire, Miriam Adelson. And that rally was sponsored by the Adelsons. Basically, all the candidates came up and auditioned for the Adelsons' money, and Donald Trump won because everybody was just into Trump. The rest of the candidates didn't matter. And so from that point on, Trump was a vehicle for the Adelsons, and he's come out and said, they've given me hundreds of millions of dollars. They don't care about any other issue. They don't care about what Americans are going through. They only care about Israel bombing Iran, doing what Netanyahu wanted. Look at who's surrounding Donald Trump. His advisors, Mike Waltz, his entire career has been backed by AIPAC. I obtained leaked audio from a private AIPAC session in which the CEO of AIPAC, Elliot Brand, said, we groomed Mike Waltz and Marco Rubio from the beginning because they were in Congress. And John Ratcliffe, he mentioned John Ratcliffe, the CIA director. And we made sure that they were like good candidates. And then we've backed them since the beginning. And now they are in key national security posts and they are our lifelines within the administration. And if anything goes awry, we have clear lines of communication to them. That's an unregistered foreign lobbyist describing Trump's almost his entire national security team. I had a high-level Trump source tell me during the 12-day war that John Ratcliffe was functioning like the Mossad stenographer, basically getting fed misinformation and disinformation by his Israeli counterpart, David Barnea from the Mossad, and feeding it right to Trump that the Houthis are going to get an Iranian nuclear warhead in a week. We have to attack, attack, attack. And then you have Donald Trump coming out and saying, well, the Israelis were going to attack Iran, so we had to go in. Trump has also said about as much. We had three senior Trump officials tell the Washington Post the same thing. As you said, Marco Rubio also said after a Gang of Eight briefing that the Israelis were going to attack first. Lindsey Graham has been advising Benjamin Netanyahu.
Lindsey Graham's statements are just insane.
He's captured Trump. I mean, Lindsey Graham is.
I don't think so. Like Tucker was there with Trump. I think Trump is.
Trump just denounced Tucker. To Israel. Trump just denounced Tucker because he's got to keep the donor class on his side for the midterms. It's Trump has been totally turned into a vehicle for Israeli influence. And right, then so you have Tony Blinken.
Max Blumenthal talking to Mario Nofal and making some great points. And just to like follow up on that, because obviously he's talking about the people around him. Here's the post. AIPAC got caught. Max Blumenthal obtained leaked audio of AIPAC CEO admitting they groomed Marco Rubio and Mike Waltz from the beginning. Remember, Waltz was caught during the Signalgate scandal. He was the one who leaked the Signalgate chat to another of a fellow Zionist, but a far left guy who ran the Atlantic, allowing them in the Signal chat group to leak the Signal chat to put pressure on Pete Hegseth to try to get him replaced by somebody who was more hawkish, because despite the fact that Pete Hegseth seems all in on the Third Temple rebuilding, the starting the apocalypse, like, you know, I'm not saying that he's not on board with that. He at least served in the infantry and understands the value of human life and is not willing to willy-nilly put American soldiers at risk. So that was an impediment, and they tried to get him out. And then it was discovered that Mike Waltz was communicating in secret behind Trump's back with Benjamin Netanyahu the days running up to Netanyahu's meeting with Trump in D.C. So as our president is preparing for a meeting with the Israeli prime minister, his national security advisor is in contact secretly with that prime minister, feeding him information to give him a leg up on the negotiations. Like, that's treason, according to me. But the only thing that happened was Mike Waltz, when this was discovered, got demoted to ambassador to the UN. So it shows, you know, what happens when these guys get caught in their little, in the little games that they play. So yeah, it's no surprise that he was a, you know, AIPAC Israeli agent. They practically all are. The reason Donald Trump went to war in Iran, according to him, was his son-in-law, Jared Kushner. Let's go to clip 28 here.
It elucidates a very disturbing.
The situation was very quickly approaching the point of no return, and the United States found it intolerable, in my opinion, based on what Steve and Jared and Pete and others were telling me, Marco, so involved, that I thought that they were going to attack us. I thought they would, if we didn't do this at the time we did it, I think they had in mind to attack us. And
yeah, he had a feeling, you know, he had a hunch. But Marco Rubio and his son-in-law, Jared Kushner. So Kushner has, of course, been an enemy of the MAGA base since Trump's first administration, because so many things were given over to Kushner that turned out bad for America. And his advice seemed always to be both the key advice that changed Trump's mind and changed Trump's mind to the worst decision. Right, this is this story from brownstone.org. It's from all the way back in August of 2022, but it remembers that Jared Kushner and the mystery of the first U.S. lockdown, basically saying that to get this unprecedented, untested idea of a lockdown going, it was really Jared Kushner pushing Trump to do it. Jared somehow believed that they knew something about pandemics because they worked in healthcare delivery, so he called his friends. Bowler headed the $60 billion U.S. International Development Finance Corporation and still does. It's one of those many agencies that throws contracts and cash to big shots within industry. Before that job, he was head of Landmark Health Delivery Service, which meant he knew business and finance, not public health. He is among those high finance execs who were drawn to healthcare, not for the science, but for the money. As for Turner, he's a serial entrepreneur who got to start selling snakes from his parents' garage. Truly, he founded an ad agency that was eventually sold to Google 10 years ago, Invite Media, for more than $70 million. His company, Flatiron Oncology-related electronic software, sold to Roche in 2018 for $1.9 billion. His page at the Wharton School describes him as young, entrepreneurial, and Google-owned. He's now a billionaire investor at an implausibly young age. And it was these people that they brought in, Bowler and Turner, burrowed into a room in the basement of the West Wing and started calling people who grasped both the scale of the crisis but also the politics. Over that weekend, they put together recommendations that then circulated them with Birx and Fauci. The guidelines were refined farther before being presented to Trump in the Oval Office. They wanted to recommend shutting down in-person education at schools, closing indoor dining at restaurants and bars, canceling travel. Kushner had been preparing Trump for the possibility they were going to need more draconian actions, and it was his friends that made the case. Okay, so again, all the way back in Trump's first administration, Jared Kushner was the brains in the engine behind one of the most damaging policies ever implemented in America, the coronavirus lockdown. But it doesn't end there. Of course, Trump also mentioned Marco Rubio as being key to this decision. I also want to remind you from the video that we saw yesterday of Anthony Blinken talking about his time in the Trump in the Obama administration that Israel tried exactly the same thing with Obama. Israel also told Obama, we're about to attack Iran. You better attack with us or else you're going to get hit. Obama called their bluff. Okay, so just remember, as we were reminding you yesterday, every presidential administration is pushed relentlessly by the Jewish lobby to go to war with Iran. For 30 years, this has been the case. They've been more successful in some, less successful in others. They have been extremely successful in the Trump administration, despite the fact that the exact same strategies didn't succeed with somebody like Obama. Make of that what you will. Larry Ellison, meanwhile, vetted Marco Rubio for loyalty to Israel. So you've got the AIPAC head saying that he basically groomed Rubio to be a politician. You also have Larry Ellison communicating about vetting U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio for his allegiance to Israel years before Rubio emerged as one of the staunchest advocates of the occupation state in Washington. This was correspondence uncovered by DropSite News, documents Ellison coordinating with then-Israeli ambassador to the UN Ron Proser to assess Rubio's pro-Israel credentials during his 2016 presidential run. The emails form part of a wider cache of diplomatic and private correspondence now verified in part by investigative outlet DropSite, illustrating the fusion of pro-Israel lobbying, media consolidation, and tech infrastructure under Ellison, a longtime donor to the Israeli military and staunch supporter of the apartheid state. At the center is Oracle, a software giant Ellison co-founded and chairs, which is poised to play a decisive role in reshaping U.S. media landscape and controlling key platforms on public discourse. So Larry Ellison, obviously, his son just bought CBS News. The Ellison family, a media conglomerate, is in talks to buy Netflix and Warner Brothers and Paramount. I mean, they are going for broke and trying to own everything. Back in 2016, he was emailing with the ambassador to Israel saying Marco Rubio will be a great member of our team. He's on our team. He's on our side, and he'll serve our interest well. And I was talking about connecting Rubio to their other puppet, Tony Blair, who, of course, has a son who's in charge of the digital ID in the UK. So you've got Marco Rubio groomed by AIPAC from even before he was a politician, vetted for support of Israel by Larry Ellison before ever, you know, making it to the big time. And then he's placed in as Secretary of State, where he's serving their interests in convincing Trump to go to war with Iran in collaboration with Jared Kushner, who has routinely, over the time of Trump's administrations, been the source of the most damaging and negative policies that Trump has ever supported.
Has InfoWars not delivered? In Gladiator, he chops up the first four guys when they throw him in the ring, or you know, in the arena, and he says, "Are you not entertained?
Are you not entertained?"
Well, I would say to you, are you not satisfied? Have we not delivered in the fight against the globalists? You bet on the right horse, and I'm asking you to continue to bet on us as the info war continues on, regardless, as we refuse to submit to the tyrants. But the reason this is such a win-win or a non-zero-sum game or a 360 win, the term I coined over a decade ago, is because everybody participated, supports freedom, supports the fight against tyrants, the fight for Team Humanity, against the globalists, and you get incredible products at the same time. So if you haven't tried Ultramethylene Blue or our Bovine Colostrum or our CMOS or our Shilajit, these are all incredible products available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you're going to buy anything on the site, you can become a VIP for $30 a month, cancel any time for free, and instantly $40 is put in your account. The second you click in a VIP, when it recurs each month, instantly $40 goes in. So you make $10 to spend on top of the $30 you spend. Special deals, special offers, and with one click in your profile, you cancel anytime for free. So it's a very light commitment, and you get special deals on everything else. So anybody buying anything on thealexjonesstore.com should be a VIP, so make sure you do that. You have until the 17th of March to take advantage of the March mega sale at thealexjonesstore.com. This is one of the biggest sales of the year yet, up to 40% off store-wide. 25% off on the shirts, on the hats, 10% off on things like the collectible knives, and up to 40% off on supplements like Ultramethylene Blue. And the more you buy, the more you save. So take advantage of the March Mega Sale right now, running until the 17th at TheAlternateStore.com and be the reason we'll always stay on the air. I'm going to salute you and thank you. Take action now.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.